just dancing with my eyes closed. 'Cause everywhere
this is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
It's 10 after 4. Thank you for tuning in. So many people that are writing in on addiction and mental health and their kids, and many personal stories as well, I'm sorry to say, on the text board about people who have lost a lot to gambling. The Center for Addiction and Mental Health is calling on the federal government to step it up to restrict gambling ads to protect youth mental health. Ontario has already banned advertising for these online gaming platforms, these gambling platforms, I should say, and they have specifically prohibited the use of celebrities and also athletes. To give you an example, here's an ad that is for one of these platforms online that utilizes two very famous hockey players.
Connor's just finishing up. He's going to be pumped your hair.
No rush. Come on! Drain that three!
Trying to practice here, Wayne.
You need it. Yes!
Net's that way, bud. Shouldn't you be golfing?
That's Connor McDavid and Wayne Gretzky, the great one. New regulations came into effect in February of this year, banning the use of pro athletes to advertise and to market online sports betting. So you can no longer see that. This has strengthened the standards to restrict what we can and cannot see. But there are people that are calling for more, and that includes CAMH. The center wants the Ontario government to approach this from a public health perspective. And I chatted with one of the experts that has been working on this. He's a doctor who helped to develop these recommendations. He told me that banning ads with celebrities is a major step forward, but he said that more needs to be done.
Well, very suddenly inundated by these ads all the time, through especially during sports events. And I think there was too much of it. They have curtailed some aspects of it, such as the use of celebrities in ads that are specifically encouraging people to gamble, which was, I think, a major step forward.
That's Dr. Nigel Turner, a scientist at the CAMH Institute for Mental Health Policy Research. He contributed to these recommendations, and he went on to explain exactly why they're concerned about this. Not just the fact that we're all getting a barrage of these ads all the time, but specifically young people and how it could potentially impact them.
Their brains are malleable. They're growing. They're still changing. And they're very susceptible to addictions during adolescence because their brains are growing. Addiction basically is a bad habit you learn, and your brain gets stuck in that mode. And the people who are in their adolescence are particularly susceptible to getting stuck. The amount of financial losses related to gambling exceed any other addiction.
That was an interesting point of the interview, Chris, because I said, well, and that must be even worse because when you're younger, typically you're more broke. You don't have as much of a financial foundation. So
Right. You
have even less to lose. There's really no padding there. There's no buffer. And he said, well, sure, but that doesn't stop you. Then you go on and you borrow money or you fight for money because you're in the throes of addiction. And he said it even happens at schools where the kids are playing dice or they're playing cards in the stairwell or outside the school and they get into fist fights or they borrow money or they steal. They get into crime. So just because you don't have the money, it's not really a logical thing. It's not a linear thought process. Well, I don't really have much to lose, so I won't gamble. Doesn't work that way. They find a way to gamble. And he said the kids are doing it as young as 15, 13. They're in sports pools. They're in gambling. That leads to debt. That leads to stealing. That leads to fighting. It leads to problems, which is why they're calling on the government to do this.
Hey, my question for you today is...
Only one question.
Quick question.
Question.
Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
What do you think? Does the government need to regulate online gambling platforms and the advertising that accompanies them even more? Is this required? Do you think it's necessary? I'm going to say this, Danny. There were a few people, maybe a handful of people, that said it is what it is. It's advertising. Kids have to be exposed to all sorts of things in life, so suck it up. But I think for the most part, people do believe that we are seeing way too many of these ads.
Yeah. So even the folks that did think that way, that, you know, it is what it is, they still agree that something more needs to be done when it comes to regulating gambling ads. We had parents texting in, men, women, people with experience with addiction, and they all found common ground in needing stricter rules and regulations around how gambling is advertised to folks, whether they're young or old. They say they shouldn't be treated, they say they should be treated like smoking ads and other ads around addictive substances and habits. So they all agree on that. And especially when it comes to kids, nip it in the bud. Don't wait until it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
Don't try to fix it when it becomes a problem, but put parameters in place so it doesn't become a problem in the first place.
Here's one of the contrarian text messages, because I just want to make sure that we get all the viewpoints on here. We do try to read all the text messages, and I try to respond when I can. We get a lot of them every day,
yeah,
especially on hot topics like this one, which I welcome. So here's one of the people, Mark from Barrhaven, who wrote in, who said this: have we really gotten to the point where we need to protect people from advertising? Mark says, I feel like we live in such a protectionist society already that it's becoming silly. So there's Mark's viewpoint, which I thought was interesting, but most people did disagree, including one person here, Caleb, who said that he believes gambling ads should be like smoking ads. He said, way too many of them. My friend has a 12-year-old, and the 12-year-old is always bugging him during sports games because he wants to place bets because he's seeing the ads for betting. Mm-hmm. And that brings us back to what CAMH is asking for. They said if there's ever an audience, I believe the percentage is 25% of the audience is expected to be minors.
Yeah, 23 or something. Yeah.
Around 25% of the audience. If they believe that a venue or the program is going to have a significant proportion of the audience consisting of young people, then don't have advertising there, aka on a kid's TV station or during a sports game. You know that kids are going to be watching the big hockey game, so then don't allow these online gambling ads to be showcased during that time. Let's get to one of our callers, Kevin, who says he believes more needs to be done to regulate these ads.
There's far too many of them on TV, and still, as I said in my text, I think it's consistent through any hockey game, basketball game, baseball game, football game you watch right now.
So there's one take on that, which he's talking about exactly why this could be such a problem. Well, it could be a big overhaul. A place that we can start, he believes, is when these ads are shown. Just like, you know, when you were growing up, the movies with the nudity or whatever wouldn't come on till later at night. Kevin was suggesting that we filter out some of these ads for online gambling when kids could be tuned in.
Drop them. Not going to say drop them entirely, but maybe put them on only between certain hours of the evening, maybe after 9 o'clock, and not when a lot of young kids are watching.
A texter just asked, well, where do the parents fit in here with the parenting then? I believe that's John from Renfrew. Yes, it is. John's a regular listener. Yeah, for sure. And I do put a lot of importance and a lot of onus on parents. You raise your kids and you expose them to what you want. But you can't control, I mean, Chris, as a parent, you can't control every single ad that comes on TV. Imagine before, especially the proliferation of these online gambling ads before celebrities and actors were banned in them, which just happened last month. Imagine back in the summer racing over to the television and hitting the remote or stopping the YouTube or closing the browser every single time one of these ads came on. You can't be everywhere all the time all at once.
And a lot of these ads are kind of spliced into the coverage, right? It just, how do you stop it real quick without having questions being asked?
Which is to go back to CAMH and why they're suggesting that ads should be banned outright in media and venues where minors make up more than 25% of the audience. That was the stat, more than 25%. Here's another voice, Paul, who is an alcoholic in recovery. He's 3 years sober. And he says, addictions are addictions. So if you tackle one addiction, you've got to tackle them all.
If you're going to do it for one, you have to do it for everything. You can't pick and... But what it sounds like to me they're doing is they're picking and choosing. If they're going to do it for gambling, they have to do it for drugs and alcohol.
So there's one take on that. CJ and Rito says go for it, as in ban the ads entirely. We've banned advertising for all / most other vices. Another person here says, and by the way, this person shared this and they kind of didn't attach their name at first, and I understand why, because it does pertain to more of a sensitive personal matter. So I'll leave the name off of this one. This person writes, I completely agree with these youth gambling prevention measures. When my son was in his early 20s, he began dabbling in online poker games. He was warned to be careful, and I think he's a bright young man. Despite this, he found himself in crushing debt before he knew it. It took him a very long time to pay it all off. When I asked him how it happened, he gave a typical young person's answer. He said, I thought I only needed a couple of wins and everything would be fine. He just had no idea. It was a hard lesson. Thankfully, he learned it, and he's very responsible with his money. But that is many years later. We also just got one, and this person recently found out that their wife had been getting into this online. This person wrote, my wife got an online cash bonus from OLG for her birthday in 2022. I found out last week, but I was $30,000 too late. That she got hooked, that she was hooked in. Yikes. Does happen that way. And I should point out, you know, the lines are pretty blurred these days when it comes to online gambling versus online gaming, because some of these online gaming platforms will lure you in. And they'll lure you in because you can purchase additional things in the game. You can purchase tools, or you can, I don't know, I don't play these games, Danny, but you can get little add-ons, and they can be very costly. And I know this has happened. I can tell you stories that I hear off the air where people rack up tens of thousands of dollars in debts.
Oh, yeah.
Not from poker, not from, you know, going to the casino and physically playing the slots. No, not bingo. From gaming, from addictive gaming.
Oh, yes. I've known a few.
422. But you'll find my body fully covered in confetti, singing la da da da.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
426, welcome back. A date has been set for this year's Panda Game between the Carleton Ravens and the University of Ottawa GGs. And it looks like the Sunday schedule is sticking. For the second year in a row, it is scheduled for a Sunday at TD Place Stadium. Ted Raymond joins me in studio. Hello, Ted.
Hello, Christy. Here I am.
All right. So they're trying to cut down on the drunken debauchery and the street partying and the problems. So they've set it for a Sunday again. Is this a permanent thing? What do you think?
Well, it's definitely looking like this might be a permanent thing. You know, as you recall, last year it was held on a Sunday, and the ostensible reason they gave was because the stadium was being used on the Saturday. The Red Blacks were playing at home on September 30th, so they had the Panda game on October 1st, which was a Sunday. But, you know, the game has had a reputation for attracting a lot of raucous parties that are held the night afterwards, and there were some issues in 2021 and 2022. But then they had it on a Sunday last year, and it was pretty quiet. I mean, the universities also had on-campus events. They had, like, on-campus tailgates and parties in the evening that you could go to. And police had a couple of public intoxication arrests, but nothing major last year. So we have this statement from Carleton University now today that says that the partnership between the University of Ottawa, Carleton, and OSEG has decided to have the game remain on a Sunday after a successful event last year. Last year demonstrated successful community integration and engagement around a day full of activities. Carleton's work with the city and community groups ensures we will continue to foster a positive, safe, and fun day for all involved. So it sounds like they really liked how it turned out last year, and they're going to do it again.
Okay. So trying to make sure that the kids aren't erupting into the streets with the open containers of alcohol and the debauchery is kept at a minimum. Though I will just point out again, because I think sometimes, you know, and I'm guilty of this too, we'll say partying in Sandy Hill. I mean, gosh, it went beyond partying. It was anarchy. They were standing on top of a car. Didn't they flip a car?
A couple of years ago, they flipped a car, yes.
Yeah, they flipped a car. People were getting hurt. The kids were climbing up the light posts. I mean,
it got out of control.
No, that's not a party.
And it cost, you know, there was a major police response. It cost hundreds of thousands of dollars in overtime. And it was like, it was a significant problem. And so, you know, the city's councilor for the area had said, you know, the future of the game is in doubt.
Yeah, if it happens again,
you know,
that's it.
But so moving it to Sunday last year seemed to quell some of that. Of course, you know, like I said, there were also those on-campus events that maybe that was kind of like drawing people away from the street parties. But this year it looks like they're going to have it on a Sunday again. And it looks like it could be that going forward. That seems to be what I'm reading from this statement from Carlton.
If you were a resident of Sandy Hill and year after year you were worried about this, the weekend of the Panda game, would you stay home and mind your property, protect your property, and make sure that nothing gets damaged? Or would you hightail it out of town? I think I'd be like tail lights down the alleyway. I'd be gone, wondering what's happening in my neighborhood. How about you, Ted?
I don't know. I think I would. I think I would prefer to stay home just to make sure that nothing gets. Nothing gets rustled.
Yeah, you're probably right. I guess you wouldn't want to check in.
I would be worried the whole weekend if I was away that, like, what am I coming home to?
True, true. And I mean, I guess with technology, you could connect back in and you could look at your doorbell cam,
so.
But that would almost be worse because then you can't do anything about it. You're not there. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. Thank you for this, Ted.
You're welcome.
Ted Raymond with an update on the Panda Game in 2024. It'll be held on a Sunday again this year.
October 6th.
Yes. After everything went better last year. We'll say went better. Not perfectly, but better.
Better.
The news next.
You got a fast car. I got a job that pays all my bills.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
4:39. I wanted to turn to a statement that came out yesterday from the registrar and CEO of the College of Pharmacists in Ontario. In a pretty troubling statement that came out, the CEO was calling out the pressure that some pharmacists are facing and the concern about their ability to deliver safe and effective patient care because of the pressure that they're getting from corporations to perform billable services. Shanda Tanchek wrote that the pressure is mounting. And in her assessment, the college had gathered what she described as compelling and troubling information about the extent and impact of a growing corporate-centric pressure on pharmacists. And this apparently had been sort of amassed during a series of town halls and written submissions that came from thousands of pharmacy professionals. Among the pressures that they have reported feeling, time limits on conducting minor ailment assessments, since the provincial government recently expanded the power of pharmacists and they're able to prescribe medications for minor things, minor ailments. Also, a pressure to dispense naloxone kits. Pharmacists say that these pressures are really coming in from corporate or regional head offices, that they are trying to get everything done, that they're under a time crunch because they have basically become a gateway to healthcare. The vast majority of pharmacists reporting pressures said that they were happening at Shoppers Drug Mart, with the second highest number of reports coming in from Loblaw pharmacies, followed by Rexall. Tanchek said the college has retained counsel and is looking at legal options. To get some reaction now, Justin Bates joins us, CEO of the Ontario Pharmacists Association. Hi, Justin. Welcome back.
Hey, good afternoon, and thanks for having me on.
Are you hearing this in your role?
We have heard similar examples where there are certain business practices that have impeded the professional autonomy of pharmacists, which is something that is offside the college's code of ethics. And it's something that we do take very seriously. And we welcome the college emphasis on what the regulatory tools may be that they have currently to restrict corporate pressures from in any way trumping what the pharmacist does on a day-to-day basis to look after their patients. And, you know, certainly that's something that we need to make sure doesn't happen.
When did you start hearing these concerns?
Well, I think, you know, generally speaking, metrics or targets, quotas, however they're labeled, have been around for a long time. And, you know, I want to make sure that we don't necessarily suggest that having measurements in place is always going to be a bad thing. But I think what we're seeing is some egregious allegations of how they're being misused and misrepresented. And, you know, it's largely how they are defined and whether it's collaborative or not, and if they're fair and reasonable, and also how they're enforced. And some of the examples that have been raised have really created the kind of pressure that would be tantamount to abuse. And we need to remove that element from community practice and make sure that pharmacists are always using their clinical judgment and doing what's best for the patient as they're trained to do, and that there's no corporate objectives that would override that.
That's the concerning part of this. The pharmacist telling the college, alleging that they're feeling pressure that is not coming from their professional judgment or from another pharmacist that they work with, or even anything that's based in healthcare, but through corporate or regional head offices.
Yeah, and I also want to be careful we don't paint this as strictly one type of business model, be it on corporate or independent pharmacies. I know that measurements are used across a number of different organizations, and by and large, most of them are used effectively and do not in any way contravene the code of ethics and get in the way of a pharmacist that's doing their job. You know, what we are hearing is some of the perhaps bad situations and bad actors. And, you know, frankly, there's two parts to that. There's the adherence to the program that the government has defined and making sure that the government audits their own program for misuse. We don't stand for that whatsoever. You know, the program, if implemented appropriately and provided the service the way it's supposed to be, is a very effective program. The med reviews are proven to be one of the health quality indicators to ensure that people are taking the medications the way they're supposed to, and also that we are able to identify drug-related problems. But it's when it's not used appropriately where, you know, some potential bad actors are introducing these risks. And that's where I think the focus needs to be. If it's existing regulations, enforce them, or look at mechanisms where you're not just going after the pharmacist, but the individuals that are implementing the practices at an executive level.
It's a pretty extraordinary statement to put out there. What was your initial reaction to it?
It is extraordinary. Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of it is awareness and education that, you know, this isn't happening in every business practice and in every pharmacy practice, but there are examples where we can't have our head in the sand. And we do need to focus on solutions that protect the pharmacist and ensure that we're getting the best possible health outcomes. And, you know, in those allegations, if they true, you know, tend or, you know, come out to be true, then absolutely we need to stop these types of things from happening, because professional autonomy is, I think, a central tenet to any healthcare provider, because they're regulated health professionals just like doctors and nurses, and they have to adhere to the standards of practice and the regulations that exist today.
I do have to point out that you're right. The language you're using of calling them allegations is correct, because Loblaw is refuting this in a public relations department statement. It said they stand firm that medication reviews are vital healthcare services. It goes on to say that medication reviews directly benefit the patients, that they reduce adverse reactions and ultimately keep patients out of hospitals and urgent care. The decision says that any decision, the statement says rather, that any decision to deliver a professional service has always been and must always be made by the pharmacist. What are the next steps in this, Justin? How do we get to the bottom of it?
Well, I think, as you pointed out, we need to go through a process and do the due diligence to make sure that we fully appreciate and understand the circumstances and not jump to solutions before that work is done. We want to make sure that we don't introduce further unintended consequences by overregulation or overreaction. just to be seen to be doing something. So we have a survey, we have some of these town halls where people have shared their experiences, and now that needs to be validated. And then I think the college needs to take a hard look at what regulations they have today and what can be used as a lever to ensure that they can protect that professional autonomy and avoid scenarios where a pharmacist is put in a compromising situation, or if they have to amend the regulations to go after those situations and make sure that they have everything adequately at their disposal to protect the patient and protect the healthcare professional. And that's really their obligation.
Thanks for the time today, Justin.
And my pleasure. Thank you.
Justin Bates joining us with his reaction. He's the CEO of the Ontario Pharmacists Association. So over and over again, he stated in that interview that the professional autonomy of pharmacists has got to be protected, that nothing should be able to come in the way of that, whether it is a corporate thing or a corporate objective, that it cannot disrupt that. And as you heard from the statement here from Loblaw, it says no such thing is happening. But this comes back to a few things, which would be the allegation that there is a pressure to perform med checks for which the companies can bill money per call. I think it's something like $75 per call or something around there, Danny, to the tune of $75 per med check call.
Yes.
Maybe you can look into that. But this statement that came out, again, from the registrar and CEO from the College of Pharmacists is really quite stunning to put a statement out like this to say that it has gathered compelling and troubling information about the pressure that is on pharmacists, that they're hearing this from thousands of professionals, and that they're hearing this at town halls as well.
Yeah, so it is $75 per call.
$75. Okay, I got that right. 4:49 on the show.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
It's Wednesday, and we have our new $100 Lotto gift voucher giveaway. We do it on Monday with Lotto Max and on Wednesday with Lotto 649. This being Wednesday, we have a $100 Lotto 649 gift voucher up for grabs. It could be yours if you're caller 20. Dial 613-521-TALK, 613-521-8255. Be caller 20 and it's yours. You have to be 19 years or older to play. Please play responsibly. Caller 20, it's yours. Good luck. The 5 o'clock news is coming up next.